Welcome to the Love Cars on the Grid podcast, your global motorsport roundup with me, Tiffany Dell, and Paul Woodman.
Welcome to Love Cars on the Grid, your global motorsport podcast. For those regular viewers, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll notice two very different backgrounds because he's in America and I'm in Lisbon. We've been doing quite a bit of travels, but we're desperate to get a podcast out every single week this year, like we did last year, where come rain or shine. But we're a little bit late, but there's still loads to talk about.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should talk about the tennis because you've taken your very lovely wife, Patsy, over to watch her favourite, who got knocked out yesterday. So I don't suppose Mrs. Nadal is very happy at the moment.
That, well, unfortunately, she's shopping now, so I hope she's not going for, you know, a get back, you know, to get rid of the disappointment of the great Djokovic. Yes, we've been following our third sport. I follow motorsport number one, and football is Southampton, and Batsy's a huge tennis fan, so I treated her to this trip to Indian Wells. We've had a wonderful time coming home today. The only consolation for me would be seeing amazing game with this kid. Nardi, what's his name? I forgot his name now.
Italian boy.
Luca, yeah. Nardi. Anyway, he comes from Valentino Rossi's hometown. So there's a motorsport connection, even when it comes to tennis. It was an amazing match. But so that's why our sound quality, we always get complaints, is poor because we're both talking to devices in foreign countries. But it's worth having our podcast, even if we're 2 days late, because what a wonderful weekend we had with the Ollie Bearman story, a great positive story for after the negativity of the opening Grand Prix. And also it's worth, because I mean, other podcasts don't cover the around-the-world motorsport. You know, we're looking at, it was IndyCar, there was Indy NXT with Jamie Chadwick News, there was MotoGP to talk about, there was Super Formula in Japan, there was the NASCAR, of course. So lots to talk about for those that might have missed what happened last weekend. But has to start with Ollie Bearman. I mean, just...
I'm glad it is going to start with Ollie Bearman. I'm glad it's going to start with a positive, because every week for the last goodness knows how long, it's been about Christian bloody Horner and this whole Red Bull saga.
We'll catch up with the latest on that when we've talked about the race first. I think it's almost a shame. I think he's still kicking himself. He didn't qualify better. You know, I think, you know, even the 1 hour FP3 was in had a 20-minute red flag, I think, when one of the spirits, not spirits, I can call them spirits, one of those green things called.
The Aston Martins?
No, the Audis, but they're not Audis.
Oh, Stake.
One of the Stake boys crashed. Zhao, I think, crashed. So he lost 20 minutes of the 1 hour he did have, and then into qualifying. And just an amazing performance. And he had to got that one.
That 3/10. If it wasn't a street circuit, he would have got into the top 10. But street circuit, he cannot afford. You can't push it. You can't push it. Yeah. You hit the wall. That's it. And then it's game over. So instead of being a hero, he can't do it. He wasn't ready. So it was such a fine line. And because it was a street circuit.
You know, he'd been riding in with the Mercedes and the Aston. He'd been in racing with Alonso.
Absolutely.
So it would have been an amazing thing, but it wasn't there, but he still had an amazing race. He held up
Let's just go back because he qualified pole position for GP2. Yeah. So he went to bed thinking that he's going to start. He's super excited because he thinks he's going to start at the front of the grid for GP2. You know, new season, fantastic. What a place to be. And then he gets a call because of Carlos having the appendicitis. He gets a call. Not only is he going to be in Formula One, the youngest ever British Formula One driver, but he's driving a bloody Ferrari. I mean, that is unbelievable. It's literally what people aspire to their whole careers. Lewis Hamilton's just going there. He's driving a Ferrari in his first ever Formula One on a street circuit. Incredible. What a lad. And his dad, I can't.
Lovely, was he? He nearly sat on the wall, didn't he, once? And dad was going, oh, gosh. the sad thing is, you know, however brilliant it was, you know, I think, you know, he'll be lucky if he gets a Haas drive next year. I mean, this is the problem with so few cars on the grid. You know, he's not going to go straight into a top six team. But you never know. Maybe someone might snatch him for some reason if something goes. But it was just I was so nervous for him at the start because that stupid first corner they've got, you know, the left right chicane that they seem to like to design because they know they'll cause crashes at turn one. So he had to be so circumspect and be a bit patient. But yeah, there was, I mean, of course, we Red Bull was still first and second. We have to compliment them, Max, on another of, you know, we hardly noticed Max was there, to be honest, too. Because there was a great dissolution interest with Hamilton and Piastri. And it was that sort of frustrating drive where you get this a lot, where you get one car that's fast, a straight line, Hamilton, and then Piastri's McLaren was incredibly quick through the fast snakes. But only you can only overtake with the DRS. You know, if you overtake on the first DRS down to the last turn hairpin, you get re-overtaken, you know, going down. So you have to be patient and wait. Piastri must have been going mental trying to get close enough. But every time it came to the straight, you know, Lewis had probably charged his battery up. And it was an interesting, but a great demonstration of how cars are set up in different ways and cause racing. And then we had the K-Mag train, which pissed me off. I mean, Crofty at one stage was saying that Magnussen should be driver of the day, you know, maybe some driver of the day. But it showed again how these cars, you know, they can follow a bit closer, but you can't overtake. You know, somebody in the previous Grand Prix, and the driver says, I'm faster than Ricciardo said about Yuki, didn't he, last Grand Prix? You know, I'm faster, mate. I'm faster. You know, I want to overtake. Well, if you're faster, overtake.
Overtake him, yeah.
But they can't. It just shows that even, you know, they can't follow a bit closely, dreaded aero dominated cars, unless you set up the perfect pre-DR.
But hang on a minute. Hang on a minute, Tiff, because you know that even Formula Fords, unless it's a tow, same with the Caterham, you know that it's hard to overtake someone with the same car, same performance. It is hard anyway.
2 seconds a lap, Magnussen was slow. And of course, the overtake, which annoys me, you know, he deliberately overtook Yuki, knowing he had to go four wheels off to complete the pass. You know, so it was a deliberate cheat. And they get these 10 seconds, but he didn't care. He'd already got 10 seconds for putting, he put in the wall, but he put one of the RBs into the wall. And it's got to be a give the place back. There's got to be a steward that's preferably a former racing driver. And the Americans do it in IndyCar. And you just watch the monitor. If you see something like, you just straight away, no, give the place back. Because he deliberately got in front of the train and then deliberately went slow through the fast snakes where nobody can overtake, you know, to give 2 seconds a lap advantage to Hülkenberg to get the 1 point for Haas. A few of the drivers at Albon's come out and said, you know, this has to stop. You know, we have to get a ruling that you can't do that. But yeah, I didn't like that at all. It made for interesting television as Crofty was getting very excited. But, you know, when you know what's going on and he's just deliberately balking the people behind, was a bit of a disappointment, really.
Yeah. What was the highlight of the show for you then, other than Ollie Bearman?
Well, just Ollie. I was just in tears when he crossed the line almost. You know, just sort of imagine that was him, you know, having been, you know, the young driver coming up to the ranks, what it meant, you know. He was so very profound. I think it was a bit of a finger went in to wipe the tears on the slowing down lap, but he was very quickly into sort of full PR mode. Yeah, I wish I could have done a bit longer stint on the red tyres, because I really like, you know, straight as a professional Grand Prix driver. But the way Lewis, you know, they all hugged him, and it was just a magical moment of motorsport when these things happen.
And they've all come out afterwards and said, how well he done, because they all respect. That's a massive, massive achievement what he did around a street circuit. Yeah. If it's around Paul Ricard or Silverstone or Spa, anywhere, it doesn't matter. You've got so much runoff, but you've got no room for error.
Yeah. So, and you look at Lance Stroll's crash. You know, Lance was, you know, well, an inch too tight on that apex and boom, he hits the wall.
The thing that got me, and I welled up as well, I'll be honest, it was his dad afterwards. I didn't know whether you saw the hug afterwards. And if you didn't see it, and you know what? It's brilliant. I tell my children, you know, my son, Oliver, he's going to be 13 next month. You're never too old to hug or give your dad a kiss or give your dad a hug. And that was brilliant, because he gave his dad a kiss. His dad gave him a kiss, gave him a big hug. And brilliant. That really melted me, I have to say. That was
also, you know, one of the toughest Ferrari team managers said, you know, he didn't make one mistake, you know, in an hour and a half. It's an anti-clockwise, so it's really tough on the neck, because they're more left-handers than right-handers. And not, you know, he can't make an error. Yeah, amazing, amazing drive. So let's hope he's on the Formula One grid next year, but I think it'll only be in a Haas, which, you know, it's a bit like being in, you know, like Max Verstappen was in an AlphaTauri, whatever it was called when Max Verstappen was in the B team. A couple of years, and you've got to look ahead.
Yeah, we have. Sorry, and I was cutting you out, over talking you there, but There's a bit of a chance he may be in Australia because it took Ricardo 13 days to recover with his appendicitis. So, look, these are super fit guys, but you never know. So, fingers crossed, we'll see him at Albert Park as well.
Well, quite why Carlos went to the Grand Prix the day after the operation. I mean, I know he wants to sort of show, I'm here, I'm fine, I'm a smooth operator. It seems a bit of a stupid thing to do when you've just had an appendix out of the lady bed from watching on the telly. But of course, the politics went on. It seems Red Bull sort of, they're all shutting that, but it's going to be a miserable place for the year ahead, really, because
he's not going to last.
I don't got no inside knowledge here, but looking at it, it seems to be sort of Helmut Marko, Jos Verstappen, and the young lady, and Austrian Red Bull on one side of the garage, and the other side seems to be the Horners and Thailand Red Bull, and that's almost a team as they appear to be in. And Marko is obviously accused of being the person that leaked it, and he denies. So, no denies.
So I'm on a Skoda press launch in Lisbon, and not a jolly like you. And then lots of the guys are talking about it. And the rumor on the street was that the Asia mob are actually very disappointed because lots of women's rights have complained to the Asian fraternity of the yeah. business. So they're now trying to put it right. And the rumor is that they're going to be leaving, but he's going to be leaving. But look, you know, I've got some intel on this, and I know, and I've got to be careful what I say, but I know the lady is incredibly good friends with the Verstappens, just friends with the Verstappen family.
That's
and they're pissed off. And they're pissed off. And they're so, because they've seen how she's been treated. And look, you know, I've been on lots of planes this week. I watched a Joan Collins, Louis Theroux thing. And she said, look, you should be able to touch somebody and say, your hair looks beautiful. Your dress looks amazing. You look fantastic. And I agree with Joan there, but it's a little bit too far from what I've seen is just a little bit too far, and I'm amazed he's still there. But I'm not to judge. It's just an opinion. It's just an opinion.
It's not just Red Bull, because the Williams saga got back in the papers again, because the PR lady they employed when the new Williams team was set up, she was dismissed or left. I can't remember the whole story, but she's suing Williams for £9 million for unfair dismissal or something. And now there's a sexual complaint joined the same. I didn't bother to read all the names, but since it's not just Red Bull, it's Williams as well. So anyway, we move on from Formula One. Formula Two, which should have been the Ollie Bearman show, wasn't the Ollie Bearman show. Interesting goes, Formula Two still got these new cars, all these teams are sort of trying to sort out, and Richard Verschoor won the reverse grid race. Then he and his teammate were then kicked out for throttle mapping. Remember the guy was kicked out from pole position in the last race because his ride height was low. They're all working on these, trying to find that little cheating, no, not cheating, grey areas. And both the team cars were kicked out for having a throttle map that was outside the perimeters. Good story in the feature. Enzo Fittipaldi, who I think is the best of the young Fittipaldis. Pietro Fittipaldi, of course, has been Haas's reserve driver. He's doing IndyCar this year. He's never really shone to my mind, but this Enzo boy could be the Fittipaldi to end up in Formula One. No joy for the Brits. Zach O'Sullivan had two retirements and Taylor Barnard, 2/13. So without Ollie there at the front. And Ollie would probably have been quite happy that the young Italian that he's going to battle against at Prema, Antonelli, only had a 7th and a 6th. So the kid that could be the thorn in the Bearman side. But again, it's amazing. Again, set up. You know, Ollie Bearman goes from, I think he qualified 19th, didn't he, in the first round. Then he goes on pole. So, you know, Prema have looked at what's going on. It's a jungle out there to know how much it's the driver and how much it's the car, even though the cars are supposedly identical. Yeah. Now, the F1 Academy, you've got F1 Academy started as well. And our Dorian Pain that we've been promoting won both races. Abby Pulling, though, you know, the British girl, we've got to keep supporting her because, you know, she was close. She pushed Dorian in both races all the way. And then, of course, ended up being the winner of race two because Dorian didn't see the checkered flag, did another lap. You know, they disqualified her.
Can you imagine? I did that at Silverstone on qualifying. I did that at Silverstone. It was pouring with rain in my defence. And yeah, okay. So my first year, But can you imagine doing that at that level? I guess emotion, tears, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, the team should have been on the radio saying congratulations. So that's a bit weird. But maybe the radio doesn't work that well in F1 Academy. And of course, everybody, when you say things like this, you get so many tweets saying, oh, what if a marsh coming on the track? You know, Tiff, you've got to be safety. And I know. But the Formula One world, nobody goes on the track until the race director says you can. So there wouldn't have been any marshals on the track because they don't go on the tracks. It's like we see cars crash and the marshals are standing behind the wall. They don't run out to a car that crashes anymore. They wait until they're allowed. So there wouldn't have been anybody on the track. And even, you know, so it's a shame. So she only won one race and Abby Pulling has got a lucky win there. So we'll
do you
see.
Know what? Do you know what? In a way, I'm pleased for the F1 Academy because she is clearly the real deal. She could have gone on to do a max and won every single race this year, but we'll see how that goes. A long way to go, but hopefully Abby will keep pushing her because she's some talent as well.
Yeah. And she's doing British Formula 4, so we'll see her in Britain as well. So we'll maybe pull it off in the end. Staying on single seats over in America, I always say people, you know, watch IndyCar. I didn't watch much, I caught glimpses on a telly, but around St. Petersburg, amazing street circuit. It wasn't the best for trophies. Joseph Newgarden dominated it. It wasn't the most exciting. Like I'm telling people, not every race is exciting. But just watching those Indy cars through the walls at St. Pete, the dab of opposite lock and wheel spin and the drivers doing the driving. Terrifying pit stops when they have a safety car. And they all come in. Everyone came in on the first full course of yellow. And all the mechanics standing out. And they're putting fuel in as well as wheels, you know. But... So Joseph Newgarden won. British boys, Callum Ilott had that one-off drive with McLaren and finished 13th. Tom Blomqvist, 17th. And Jack Harvey, 19th. So we haven't got any Brits up front in IndyCar anymore. But great racing. But, of course, we've got three Brits in Indy NXT, the Formula 2 of IndyCar. And our front runner, Louis Foster, had been quickest in testing. He only qualified fourth, finished third. Nolan Siegel was the winner there. But Jamie Chadwick had a good qualifier. She was 10th. Got taken out on the first lap. I'd eventually retired, I think, had to pit. And Josh Mason, the other Brit out there, finished 17th in the end. But so Jamie, good, qualified 10th. But I think they've got about 20 cars in the field now, so it's becoming more and more competitive. So we'll see how Jamie gets on there. Then of course,
Can I do MotoGP intro, please?
Yes, you're over to you for MotoGP. What's your headline?
Well, my headline is I was in Qatar and I spoke to the lovely Susie Perry. But I did not go to the MotoGP. But I was there for other car-related issues. But sadly, I didn't go to see the MotoGP. But I saw lots of the guys milling around the different hotels and stuff. And that's my only headline I have of MotoGP. So
your only headline is that you saw Susie Perry, which is...
No, I didn't see her. I spoke to her.
Didn't even see Susie.
No, I spoke to her. She was still on the track. It's a hard graft, you know, we're doing this sort of thing, what they do, live broadcast. She was there. Yeah. The race was 6 p.m. in the evening. She was there from like late morning and she was still at the track at 11 p.m. at night. Yeah, and then she had an early flight the next morning.
She does the research. She knows the sport through and through. She knows all the riders and all the teams. So she's a true trooper in MotoGP. It was pretty much back to normal, though, because Jorge Martin won the sprint race, which he tends to be the sprint winner. And the champion, Francesco Bagnaia, on the factory Ducati, won the Grand Prix. But the others had closer. Brad Binder and the KTM was second in both races. So KTM have got closer a little bit to the Ducati domination. I think one of the Aprilias had a third place as well. Yamaha and Honda, sadly, still not even in the top 10, which is a shame, really, because we don't want to lose the Japanese manufacturers. But it is still dominated by Ducatis with KTM. And of course, Pedro Costa, he's on a last, he's on a satellite KTM. He had an eighth and a ninth, promising. Mark Marquez, of course, who jumped off the Honda and gone on to Ducati. Again, a satellite Ducati, so last year's pipe. Confusing still. He had a fifth and a fourth. So it's happening. But still, I think the top 10 had six Ducatis, the two factory ones and four satellites. So we'll hopefully... They've actually got less tested Ducati. They do quite a good sort of balance of power method. They've given Yamaha and Honda more testing and more tyres. I don't know quite what the details were. I read it a while ago. So they are going to get more chances to catch up with Ducatis. But
and LaSalle for the bikes was quite good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a great track for bikes. It was really number one, you know, a huge long straight, and they love all those turns, and there's a hairpin left halfway around the lap where you can overtake. You always know that track needs sort of two places, a lap where you can have an overtake rather than just, you know, the one building up all the way, waiting for the one. Moto2, though, we had no riders on the starting grid because Jake Dixon had the highest of high sides, horrendous in free practice. Wasn't even qualified, I don't think. I mean, nothing broken. He's been fully checked over. They wouldn't allow him to race. But thoughts with Jake, and hope he's got all those bruises out of his body for the next round. I wasn't sure last time we spoke last week whether the British team was still doing Moto3, and they are. And Scott Ogden, they had a good rating, but 13th, and Josh Whatley, 18th in the Moto3 craziness. I'd love to have seen it, because I think the first seven were covered by half a second or something as they crossed the line. But this Colombian kid that we saw talked about last year, this David Alonso, or David, I don't know how to pronounce it in Colombian, David Alonso. He seems to be the master of getting to the front of those packs. I think he started the last lap third, you know, it's often, you don't want to be leading, that's for sure. But he came out winner yet again in a tight pack finish. So I think he's definitely the star of Moto3 for the future. But great, I didn't see any of it, always great, especially Qatar down the straights. Over to Japan, the first Super Formula weekend. Where poor old Teo Pourchaire, I think he mentioned, you know, he's looking at Ollie Bearman. Teo Pourchaire won the Formula 2. I think he won Formula 3 as well. You know, he's the sort of the spare, what's the team called? Spark. Why do I keep on calling it Spark? It is Spark. What's he
steak.
Called?
Steak. Just think of fillet steak.
Yeah, all right, I'll remember it now.
It's not steak for meat. It's a steak that you put down. You put a steak down on a bet.
Yeah, I don't like to encourage advertising gambling, so I'll think of steak you eat. I ignore what the sponsor does because I don't like advertising for gambling. It's an awful idea. But of course, he should have been instead of Zhao. He should have been in, you know, a year ago. Pourchaire, he was the kid. He's winning everything, you know. But now he's been farmed out to sort of prove himself in Japan for another year's waiting in the waiting room. And he had a tough day. He qualified about 18th. His teammate was the same, 17th, 18th, not good. And then he fell off trying to keep up with the pace, took his nose cone off and ended up last. The other story out there, of course, is Juju Noda, the young Japanese girl that pushing her straight into the top former in Japan. And she was at the back about 3 seconds a lap off the pace, I think. And very physical, though, around Suzuka. Hell of a circuit. But she finished, so I mean, good for her, but I'm not sure sticking her in the top four in Japan was really the best idea. And I haven't even written down who won. Definitely a Japanese driver. I'm just following the European stories like Pourchaire and Juju. So all got excited. And of course, there was NASCAR. There was so much on last weekend. The NASCAR boys went to the Phoenix 1 mile. And Christopher Bell won the Toyota. Toyota seemed to be on the pace more than anyone else, but Fords were setting them fourth, and Chevrolet was sixth best. Kyle was only 14th, so it didn't look that exciting a race. Again, not every race is exciting. Keep on saying that when I recommend a Formula and someone will watch, oh, that was boring, round and round and round. Yes, that happens in every Formula. I mean, to be honest, though, you know, the Saudi was a pretty boring Formula One race if you'd taken the Bearman story out of it. All we'd have had was the Hamilton Piastri dice and the Magnussen train, and that would have been about it. So still Formula One needs to somehow sort out its overtaking abilities because they haven't
got it. Well, it needs to sort something out. There's a big gap. There's a big gap, which doesn't help with Red Bull, of course. The others are quite close together, but just something's got to happen because it's not racing at the moment.
No.
So watch this space on that. Let's see if Albert Park, Australia, makes things a little bit better. In other news, any more motor racing, or can I go to other news?
No, just next week, I ought to stay in America instead of coming home today. The only sort of international motorsport around the world next weekend is the brilliant IMSA starts at Sebring, where the World Championship, I believe, should have started, a traditional sports car circuit. 11 hypercars, 13 LMP2s. They still have LMP2s in IMSA, which the world's sports cars don't have. And something like, I wrote it, 34 GT3s. So it's a 58-car field around the daunting Sebring track. So that'd be great if you can catch it on telly somewhere. And the NASCAR boys go to their half-mile oval at Dover. I like the way NASCAR season starts. They start at Daytona, a 2.5-mile track. Then they went somewhere else for a 1.5 mile track. Then it was 1 mile last weekend, and that's 0.5 mile. So the variety, variety, ice of love.
Half mile track.
I should be sitting at home jet lag with my feet up. No, I'm at the Bewley Motor Museum actually doing a Q&A down at Bewley on Saturday night. If there's any tickets left or you're near Bewley, I'm doing a Q&A there on, with Petrol Ped. Petrol Ped's my interviewee. I'm the interviewee.
Yeah. Let's move on from that. Some podcasts. There's some good podcasts out there, and you're on one and I'm on one. So if anyone's interested, there's a very good one with the guys at Intercooler. They're very, very cool guys at Intercooler. I downloaded it to listen on this flight, and I sat next to an American couple who kept me chatting nicely all the way over to Lisbon. But I will listen to yours on the way back. Did you enjoy that? The Intercooler with Andrew and Dan?
Yeah, they're a lovely team. True car fans, a real car enthusiasts, you know. And yourself, where have you been podcasting then?
I was podcasting with the lovely Sam Moore, so he does the car chat. So just a very nice car guy again, a good photographer as well. So that's available, but it's bloody long. So if you've got insomnia, you might want to listen to mine. But it was great. It was really, really nice. It was like two mates, like us, a couple of mates having a chat. It doesn't feel like it's a podcast, just a couple of mates having a chat about something we're passionate about. And it was the same with myself and Sam. So listen to them if you get a chance. And
we'll be back. We'll be back Monday as normal.
Monday as normal, we'll be on the ball. So thanks for putting up with our travels all over the place, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Cheers all.